Come see Breakthrough Academy at Build Show Live. Scan the QR code or click the link in the description for tickets. Use code BTA26 for 25% off.
Don't start with your story. Don't try to hype people up, get them to like you or think you're cool. Start with their story. Why are they here? What is the problem that's getting in the way? And then from there, you can introduce everything else. If you start with, hey guys, we are behind this quarter on reaching our quota. That's not really their story. That's the business story. So don't start with your story. Start with theirs. Why are they there? What do they want to accomplish? What are they hoping to do in this world?
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Dr. JJ Peterson, welcome back to the show. Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here again.
You've been up to a lot since we last talked. So you have started a bit of your own brand, something called Badass Softy. You've moved from being the head of Story Brand after, you said, 11 years, I think. So a long stint there to building your own thing. You're now building out a brand around this leadership model and how to kind of pursue leadership within, I think, organizations and how to get your messaging right with your people and publicly as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I still am with StoryBrand a little bit. I just couldn't quit them because I love the messaging and the clarity. So my role there is now called Professor in Residence. And so I still do teaching and training and curriculum writing. But yeah, I got really excited about going into the space of helping leaders, helping them communicate, helping them put their thoughts together, like in courses and books and messaging, and do it in a way that really was, you know, the reason I went with Badass Softy is this whole idea of that I believe you can be unapologetically ambitious, but also still lead with heart. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what I was like, that's kind of my heart, because even really 20 years ago, so maybe even a little bit more than that, I was touring doing improv comedy. I actually did improv comedy professionally for a number of years, and it got to a point where I was just exhausted from the touring. And I remember being in Washington, D.C., visiting my friend on a tour stop. And I said, I think I'm done touring, but I'm not quite sure what to do next. And we just started talking, and I was talking about, because when you do improv, when you're in the clubs, you don't make any money. Yeah. When you're starting out, the way you make money is corporate events, conferences, things like that. So I was in huge companies, huge conferences, and I'd see these leaders on stage who were bold and dynamic, and they were leaving a wake of really trauma, and they were horrible people, and they were hurting people around them. And I remember being in Washington, D.C. going, man, I just wish I could go back and help the next generation of leaders lead differently and communicate differently. And that's what started my academic journey. That actually, then I ended up going back and get my master's degree, ended up getting a PhD, and I started teaching. And really, it was all because I started teaching communication and leadership at the university level. So freshmen who came in, the first class they had was always with me. And then juniors, when they were doing communication, they were with me. And I was trying to help these leaders grow up. And eventually I kind of moved on from that and did some stuff in Hollywood, and then ended up working with Donna Miller on StoryBrand and helping businesses communicate more clearly. But that part of me was always there that was like, I want to help leaders communicate clearly, get their message out, especially the ones who are doing good things in the world. And I want to help them do it in a way that they can be really ambitious about it, but also kind.
So I've seen this, like, you know, my business partner and me have very different communication styles. And I find, like, for him, like, what he says is always correct, but the way in which he delivers it really can throw people off. I've been more of like a visionary brain. It's like what I think about is always seems like it's such a great idea, but then when it comes out, it gets discombobulated and everyone's like, what is he trying to tell us? And I freak people out actually a little bit. And it's just like, it's trying to understand as a leader, like, how do we get our people to see what we see, and how do we get them aligned in a way that, like, we would want them to be aligned? And it's not necessarily the idea that matters as much. Often the ideas, I find anyways, like the right thought, but it's like when we communicate, it suddenly gets totally confused. And where I want to start with this conversation is just, your journey at StoryBrand itself, like where did this kind of start to hone itself? Because you led a lot of people, you led a lot of process, you led a lot of the organization. What did you learn along your journey there, even just when it comes to communication with your people?
You know, I think there's so many areas. I think for me, the biggest thing is when we, with StoryBrand, one of the key principles is that when you're communicating, that you are the guide, not the hero of the story. What I mean by that is that every one of us in life, we're the main character of our own story. You're the main character of your movie. I'm the main character of my movie. We're living these stories every single day. Every person that works for you is living these stories. And oftentimes leaders come in and they try to puff up and say, here's where we're going. And they do this and this is a great idea and everybody needs to be on board. Not realizing that the filter that everybody they're talking to has in them is, how does this impact my story? Mm-hmm. So we think, oh, this year we're going to double our revenue and we're going to build the business. And we're going to do all these great things. And the employee is going, okay, wonderful. But how does that actually impact me?
Yeah.
How does that impact my day to day? That makes my job harder. Now, actually, I'm going to be responsible for more, and it's to put more money in your pocket. And the leader is going, well, I'm motivating everybody because of course they understand that when the business wins, we all win. You're going to get raises. You're going to keep your job. We're going to give you more benefits. But the reality is they're not communicating through that filter of understanding, oh, their employee is the hero of this story, not the business, not them. So how do you start by understanding where people are at, what problems they're dealing with, and invite them into a story that they get to be the hero of? That's the difference in the mind shift that we teach people at StoryBrand with marketing, but it also works in leadership. When I was doing any kind of employee review, or we were walking back through like a debrief of an event, or I was getting ready to launch a new project, I had to pause. And instead of going, how do I rally people and get them excited and make this the best launch we've ever had? Instead, I had to pause and go, how do I invite every person into a story that they get to be a part of and they get to see themselves as a hero in? And when I started making that shift, instead of like, we're great and you're going to do great, instead of that, and positioning them as the hero of the story and going, how do I make them excited about this, them the hero? That's when things shifted for me and things changed for me and my team.
Yeah, I see this all the time. I'm guilty of this too. But like, you go to a conference, or a lot of our guys have a business coach, or they talk to other members and they get inspired by an idea. And then they come back and they're like, guess what we're going to go do? And everyone's like, oh God, this sounds like a lot of work. That's all they hear.
Yeah. And it may be a wonderful idea, but they're already, in many cases, probably drowning.
Yeah.
They're probably feeling already a little stress and overwork. And now they're going, and now you're putting this, I have to pause everything that I've been doing for 6 months that you, in fact, told us to do 6 months ago. That's like the big part is I'm doing what you told me to do 6 months ago. I'm still in it. You've moved on to the next vision. And now you're coming in and disrupting what you told me to do. I don't understand what I'm supposed to do here. And the leader is all excited and they see the potential, but they don't pause long enough to go, how do I invite people into this story versus just telling them this is the story they have to be in?
There's an old adage I learned in sales called like paint the picture with your customer, which was all about like, you paint this picture, but you have to paint you and the customer in there together and show not just like the vision, but like, this is where you and I are going to fit here in this. Is that kind of what you're describing? Like, it's just like, don't Absolutely. Just paint your picture, make sure your team are in there and they can see where they fit in this picture. And they're a part of that.
100%. And there's actually research to back this up. So part of my PhD is in an area called narrative transportation. So I studied narrative marketing and narrative theory. And I don't remember if I talked about this last time, but in narrative transportation, what it is whenever you as a human can see yourself in a story. So like in its most simple form, if you're watching a movie and you cry, or you get goosebumps, or you jump when something scary happens, you've experienced narrative transportation. You've literally put yourself emotionally into that story. And how that happens is because you actually saw pieces of yourself in that story. You have been scared. You have longed for love. You have felt overlooked. You've underappreciated. You've had to be brave. Those themes that we see in movies, we have felt those in real life. So when we connect to those in a movie, we actually put ourselves in the movie emotionally. So that's called narrative transportation. What the research shows is the higher level of narrative transportation that you experience in a story, the more influence that story has on your thoughts and actions. And bottom line is the most powerful way to change people's minds and move them forward is through story, when you can help people experience narrative transportation. So in the same way that, like, when we connect with something in a movie, we see ourselves in a movie. If I, as a leader or in marketing or anything, if I as an employee or a customer can see myself in the story that's being told, I will experience narrative transportation, and that story will, or that message will, have a greater influence on my thoughts and actions. So it's that if you are telling a story and you're over in one side and your employee is on another side, you're in different stories and they can't see themselves in the story you're telling. Therefore, that story will have less influence on their thoughts and actions. But if you paint the picture to where you're in it together, uh-huh, and actually show a clear path forward for them to be a part of something bigger and greater and how it influences them, then you actually are helping them experience narrative transportation, bigger influence in your message.
How do you do that for a group of 20 to 50 staff? Do you know what I mean? Versus, like, I can see doing that for an individual where it's like, I know you, yes, and I know what you need and want, so I'm going to paint you into this picture with me. How do we do that for a collective group who all have different needs and different aspirations? And how do you encapsulate that, but and do that without losing the substance of your original thought?
The way you do it's actually pretty formulaic, to be honest, is you start, like, as a leader, you sit down and you identify. So as a group of people, what is it that everybody in this room wants? And you have to find a phrase that actually connects everybody. So you can't just say, look, we all know you want to take care of your kids. Maybe not everybody in the room has kids. But if you can identify what it is that everybody in the room is there for. So, for instance, when I go into a conference and I'm speaking on a stage full of marketers or business owners, I will get up on stage and the very first thing I will say is, everybody is in this room because they want to grow their business. And nobody is going to disagree with that. That's a pretty broad statement, but it fits. I don't care what kind of business you are, or if I'm being a little jokey, what I will walk up on stage and go, hey, real quick, raise your hand if you're hoping next year to do less business than you did this year. Right. Anybody? Raise your hand. All I'm doing in that moment is I'm establishing the narrative. Why are we here? We are here to grow your business. And then immediately I go into, but here's the problem. And when you posit a problem into the story, that actually hooks the audience. So if I'm on stage at a marketing conference, then I'll say, but here's the problem. Most of you are wasting millions of dollars on marketing that doesn't connect with your customers because you're telling the wrong story. If I start with those two sentences, you're here because you want to grow your business, and the problem is you're wasting money on marketing because you're telling the wrong story, I can hear a pin drop in the room, because now everybody goes, oh, yes, that is my story. Or they're curious to go, wait, am I missing out on millions of dollars? Is this my story? So I don't get up on stage and I don't go tell a funny story about when I did improv, or a funny story when I was on television that makes them like me. That's my story. I also don't get up and say, this drives me insane. I don't get up and go, how's everybody doing this morning? I can't hear you. What you're doing in that moment is you're trying to get people to affirm you as the speaker. And that's your story. They don't care. Don't start with your story. Don't try to hype people up, get them to like you or think you're cool. Start with their story. Why are they here? What is the problem that's getting in the way? And then from there, you can introduce everything else. But if you start with, hey guys, we are behind this quarter on reaching our quota, that's not really their story. That's the business story. So don't start with your story. Start with theirs. Why are they there? What do they want to accomplish? What are they hoping to do in this world? And then what is the problem that's getting in the way of that happening that you are about to tell them? So here's the solution. So I have come as a problem solver, not as a problem giver. When you show up with like this new idea that you saw at a conference and you're so excited about it and you're dumping it on your team's plate, you're really showing up as a problem giver.
Yeah.
Instead, show up as a problem solver and let the thing you're offering be the solution to the thing that they're struggling with.
It's amazing. I just wrote that down. That's going to be relevant to next week's meetings. That's going to be relevant to the webinar I do next week. It's like, yes, this is great. This is communication 101. This is what you teach at StoryBrand for so many years, but it makes sense when you just shift it into a leadership context. So, okay, done. All right. I've written some notes on this. And basically, it's like, why are we here? Okay, great. But here's the problem that's in all of our way. Great.
Yep.
Now I've got this solution that I just wanted to tell you right away, but I've stopped to tell you this because I want to go do these two things first. Now we can get into the solution because it's relevant to you and what you're after. Okay.
Because now you've actually framed, you're controlling the narrative.
Yeah.
When you come in with just the solution right off the bat, they're in control of the narrative. They're trying to figure out all this different stuff. But when you say this thing exists because of this problem, you now as the leader control the narrative. If you just say, here, you guys are doing this, now they are inventing the problem in their head. There may not be a problem that they see and it's off. Now, you can't make up a problem. It has to be something that they're actually feeling and that they're actually experiencing. Because if you make it up, then now you lose credibility in that.
Yeah, it's like we're all here to grow in our careers. We're all here to build an amazing product and service for our customer. We all take pride in our work. There's usually a common values that all of us share. Yes. That's probably the common ground for a lot of us. But here's the problem. Like operationally, we're stepping on each other's toes and we're constantly getting in arguments about it. And it's causing a lot of conflict and it's getting in the way of what we all truly care about. The thing that I would really love to propose is that we build standard operating procedures together and together build a better process so that we can all get back to what we love and live by our core values. Is that a good example?
Yes, you're making me teary because that is literally it. Because instead of you going, hey guys, we're going to start a new operating procedures.
Yeah, great.
Standard operating. You know, that's like, instead of coming in with that heart, and that's really, again, it goes back to the badass softy piece. Part of being a badass softy is recognizing what role you play in what role you should be striving to play in your leadership. And I really believe the strongest, well, in narrative theory, the strongest character in a story is the guide. So there's the hero, the victim, the villain, and the guide. Those are kind of the main four characters, and those exist in story because they exist in us, right? And sometimes we play all four in the same day. And I could go into kind of all four of those, but the reality is most people want to be the hero in a movie, but if you pause from a narrative perspective and look at it, heroes are actually pretty weak in movies. They're like up, they're down, they're overwhelmed, they're beat up, they're in jail, they make mistakes, they feel abandoned, they feel alone. That's the hero's journey. They're actually kind of weak. They don't become strong until the end, till the transformation happens, but they're full of self-doubt. The person that comes along to help the hero win is the guide. So Yoda is the strongest character in Star Wars. He helps Luke Skywalker, the hero, win. Gandalf is the strongest character in Lord of the Rings. He comes along to help Frodo win. Dumbledore in Harry Potter, the strongest character in the story. He comes along to help Harry Potter win. Aslan. I mean, you could go on and on and on. There's always somebody who shows up who's the wisest, most experienced person in the hero's story. So they've been where the hero has been and they've already won the day and they don't have anything to prove. And they show up to help the hero win. So when you look at yourself in leadership as a guide instead of trying to be the hero, you're actually the strongest character in the story. You're there to help other people win. If you try to get up and beat your chest and prove how great you are and try to win leadership, quote unquote, what you're actually doing is showing your own insecurity. Because that is trying to make the story all about you. If you're the guide, you actually don't have to prove anything. You've already won the day and you're there to help other people win.
You know, it's a really interesting thing you're talking about. When you just described like the hero, you also described what I think of as anyways as an entrepreneur, someone who has to forge their own path and lead the way and carve everything out. And it's ups and it's downs and it's emotional and it's right. And it's, and what you're describing outside of that is like, yeah, no, you need to evolve from that like badge you're wearing as entrepreneur and that identity as entrepreneur to leader. And that involves looking at it as more of a guide perspective. And that evolution, I think, can't happen day one. Like, you do have to forge a path, but as the company and organization grows, that is your responsibility to start to step back and be like, I'm not the entrepreneur anymore. I am the leader. And that's the trend. And I feel that even in my organization right now, it's like, that's what that transition requires of me.
Yes. And the truth is, like, in your story as an entrepreneur, you're still actually the hero of your own story in reality. Sure. Like, you still are going through your own self-doubts and your own. But when it comes to leading other people, you're in a more collective story. So in my own story as an entrepreneur of launching things, I play all four of those characters sometimes in the same day. Sometimes I play the victim. Like, sometimes I am a victim of things. Somebody did something to me. But sometimes I'm just playing the victim. I want people to feel sorry for me. Sometimes I play the villain. I use my, so this is a quick little thing, is that villains and heroes in stories often have a similar backstory of pain. They, you know, you notice like a scar on the villain's face. It shows they went through some. Right. So I don't know if we
literally Scar in Lion King has a scar on his face and his name is Scar.
Scar in his face. Yeah, his name's Scar. And what that shows is that they've been through something hard. Now the villain works to revenge the pain and the hero works to redeem it. So even in my own world, like, there are times where I can be a jerk to people because I'm like, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I've been hurt. So I actually hurt other people. I don't want to live there, but like, there are moments I have to acknowledge that I'm probably the villain in somebody's story. Then when I move into the hero role, I'm trying to redeem that pain. I'm trying to move forward in my own journey and become better and really, even in many ways, win. But then when I move into the guide role, now I'm not proving anything to myself. I'm actually there to help other people win. So in reality, like, for entrepreneurs, I think we are switching back and forth between the hero. If we're healthy, we're switching back and forth between the hero and guide space. So it's not always one or the other. But I think my goal in life is really to try to live more of my life in those two spaces, and in leadership, try to live more in the guide space than any others.
Makes sense. Yeah. It's like leadership with my team, be in guide mode. Hero space, when I've got to really innovate and problem solve. And usually it's creation of something brand new that's never existed before. And then stay out of the villain and victim space, because those are just the negative archetypes of what those two others are. It's the polar.
Exactly.
Okay. Cool. I want to get into this leadership stuff a bit. So, like, you know, you have this podcast called Badass Softy. I love the name, by the way. And I wanted to understand, like, what is a badass? What is a softy? Is it kind of this like leading too hard versus leading too soft and finding a better approach? Can you explain this to me a little bit?
The reason I landed on it really is because I felt like in many ways I was, say, I've worked with Fortune 100 companies and Fortune, you know, top 20 companies and everything. I mean, just huge companies. And a lot of times in some of those spaces, I felt like I was too soft for those spaces, because I was like, oh, I get what I need to do here, but I don't know if that's who I want to be. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the person who just like uses words like, well, I'm just going to be brutally honest. Well, I don't think brutal honesty is actually a good thing. I think honesty is a good thing, but you don't have to be brutal about it. And you don't have to step on other people to get ahead. But I was always inspired by a lot of them who are doing huge things and changing the world. I just don't think you have to be an to do it. But the other part is, I'm on the board of multiple nonprofits, and I'd be in the kind of a nonprofit really heart space. And sometimes I felt like I was too ambitious and aggressive for those spaces.
Right.
Where, you know, I remember one time we're sitting in a room and they were talking about their goal for the end of the year. And they said, you know, our goal is to raise $5,000 in our giving campaign. And I was like, I'm sorry, $5,000? Everybody in this room could probably over a year give $5,000. What are you talking about? $5,000? We got to go bigger. And I did it in a soft way, but I was like, hey, you got to dream bigger. You got to change the world in other ways. And so I just kind of found that there wasn't a lot out there for me, well, I have found people that I look to that I'm like, oh, they are incredible at what they do. They're changing the world, but also they're doing it in a way that is kind and human. And like somebody like a Will Gadara, who I've got to know, he wrote the book Unreasonable Hospitality. He built the number one restaurant in the world. And yet the way they became number one in the world is by seeing people, literally making people feel seen and understood through hospitality. That's what I'm talking about, is how do you say, we are going to, like, I want to be a millionaire. I want all the people who work for me to be millionaires. In order to do that, we have to accomplish some pretty big things. And yet, I do not want to lose our soul along the way. That's not worth it for me. And that's what it really means to be that badass softy. It's ambitious and kind. It's human, but driven. It's that idea of bringing those things together in a way that actually leaves the world better than where how you found it.
Do you think a lot of us have a default to be one or the other? Like when I look at me, I'm probably a default, a bit of a softy. When I look at my, you know, my business partner, he's a bit of a badass. He's a harder, right? Are people naturally bred to be a bit of a good combo, or is it often that we're just one or the other and we have to work towards?
I think we lean one way or another, yeah. Truthfully. Like I would say historically for me, I lived in that softy place. Right. Like I was a pastor. I was a dean of students at a university. I was a professor. I'm a teacher at heart. Like that's what I am. But then I have been challenged by people. I remember when I came to work for Donna Miller and he was like, we're just getting started with the business. And he said to me, you know, what's your big goal? Like what, like if you could build, like really be really ambitious in life, what would it be? And I was like, well, you know, I want to own my own home and I want to teach at Vanderbilt and I want to get a movie made. And I'd like to take, you know, 3 months off in the summer and like travel. And he goes, no, you're going to do all that. He goes, I want to be president of the United States. What do you want to do? What's your ambition? And I was like, oh, I'm not thinking big enough. And I don't think he actually wants to be president, but that's the space. He was like, you can accomplish bigger things in the world. You've got to dream bigger. And so I've learned to kind of push myself to be a little bit of a badass as far as being aggressive. And the interesting thing is I have had a movie made. I do own a house now. I'm spending this whole summer traveling while I'm working. And I teach at Vanderbilt. Like I actually achieved all of those things already. And now it's the next bigger things. I wrote a Wall Street Journal bestseller. Like there was all these things I kind of kept trying to hit. And I realized, oh, I can dream bigger. And so for me, when I say badass, I don't actually mean like hard ass.
Sure.
What I mean is driven. I mean focused. I mean ambitious and accomplishing huge things and dreaming big. And I do think that we do default to one or the other often, but how to kind of use those, what I like to call is to dance. Instead of like trying to find a balance, it's not about a balance for me. I think the way that I walk through life is a dance. There are times that I need to lean into being a little bit more softy. And there are times that I really need to lean into being more ambitious and badass. And there's a dance that happens there. And I'm learning to be better about the dance. And I'm learning to be better about leaning into both of those even simultaneously than just defaulting to one or the other.
Is there a way to like acknowledge when? Like, I feel like sometimes I almost feel like we're talking about confidence. Like my confidence impacts my ability to wake up in the morning and be a badass or to be a little bit like soft and like, I don't want to disrupt people. I don't want to, is this like the root of a little bit of it? Like, how do we identify that and how do we know when to apply it?
Yeah. I actually think that when you are leaning into your own strength and confidence, you actually can lean into both a lot easier.
Yeah.
When I am confident, like I have hard days. Like I have very hard, like I'll just be very honest. Yesterday I had a very hard day. It was like, I've delivered something in my class to Vanderbilt that I was like, that was a double. It was not a home run. Like I didn't, and it was partly because I didn't prep the way I thought I should have. So there, I looked back and then on top of that, I also didn't sleep well because the power has been going out here in Nashville. You know, there was a bunch of different stuff. I didn't sleep well. I didn't deliver well. I had 3 clients in one day. So I was exhausted by the end of the day. And by the end of the day, I was like, I'm not good. What am I doing? Starting my own business, you know, kind of thing. But part of that was just situational. But in those moments, when I am self-doubting myself or when I'm struggling myself, I don't really have the capacity to then care for my kids or my spouse, you know, or like all these other things. But when I can actually lean into my own strengths and be confident in who I am, I can be more kind and give more grace. I can also be, I woke up this morning, what was kind of wild is I was talking to my spouse this morning and I was like, oh, I'm at it. I'm getting it today. Like I actually woke up today really motivated based on even how yesterday went. So yesterday I was a bit more softy on myself. Today I'm a bit more badass for myself. And I think when I lean into both and actually am okay with those, I can help other people as well. And so it really comes back to that guide mentality is that, yes, I'm going to have ups and downs. But when I am confident, guides, here's the thing is in stories, guides don't transform. For the most part, guides don't change. They're the same at the beginning as they are at the end. So Yoda is strong at the beginning. He's strong at the end. He does not go through a character arc. He's consistent. He is there. He is steady. So that's why the story isn't about him. Even Mary Poppins, the Mary Poppins is not the hero of Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins is the guide. She's steady. The dad is the hero. He's the one who goes through the story arc. So when I'm a guide, I don't have to prove anything. I don't have to change, and not in an arrogant way, but it's I get to be steady and consistent and allow everybody else to be in that transformational journey. So when I'm confident in myself and my abilities, that's when everybody else can thrive around me.
Yeah, there's like an internal battle of confidence that goes up and down, and yet you have to come to your team with a steady level of it at all times so that they can find themselves and find you as that rock along the way.
And not fake. This is not a call to be fake either, right? Because if people know you're struggling and you're like lying about it to them, that also, that's, again, you're trying to be the hero then because you're trying to cover up your weaknesses. But coming with honesty and clarity in that honesty, and especially, here's one key thing about being a guide, is publicly, so for if I am an expert in marketing, and I'm going on social media, what I can't do on social media is say, man, you guys, every email I'm sending out right now is failing. I'm horrible at this, right? And we think, oh, that's vulnerability and honesty. But if I'm trying to get people to pay me to do their marketing, it doesn't work. Now, if I speak in vulnerability from a past perspective, so I say, about 6 months ago, I was sending out emails and every single one of them was falling flat. Mm-hmm. I was really struggling. Now you are in a position of guide because you're showing empathy, but you're not showing the quote unquote, the journey that you're in. That if you're in the journey now, that's the guy, that's the hero. But if I speak to it 6 months ago or 2 weeks ago, something in the past, you can be as vulnerable as you want about your area of expertise in the past tense, because that allows you to show empathy for where people are currently at, because they may be writing emails right now that are failing. But you can say 6 months ago, I was really struggling. I wrote 6 emails. None of them did anything. Nobody was opening. And I actually had 3 days where I was really down and wondering if I should ever do this again. From there, what I did is I learned. So you move from empathy to authority. That's actually the magic combination of what makes a guide in a story. It's those two qualities, empathy and authority. They've been where the hero has been, so they understand their pain and their struggle, but they've also already won the day. Mr. Miyagi is not on a transformational journey with Daniel, not when it comes to martial arts. He's already won. He doesn't need to prove anything. He's consistent. He can be vulnerable in every other area of his life, his love life. Sure, he can be vulnerable, but not when it comes to martial arts. He's got to have empathy because he was there, but authority because he's already won the day.
How do you manage then in the moment when you are going through this and you do have to show up and you do have to lead your team and have that confidence inside of you and you aren't through it yet? You know, maybe you're a few weeks to a month or 2 months away, but hey, cash flow just hit hard and you just ran to the bank to pay payroll and you don't want to talk about it, right? Like, how do you show up on those days and be still you, be real and not be a fake piece of shit or whatever? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. You know, this is going to be an interesting. So I was watching the Taylor Swift documentary and one of the things, honestly, if anybody's interested in really a lesson on leadership, truthfully, watch the Taylor Swift documentary. There were so many little things that I picked up on there. It was kind of crazy. But one of the things that I watched her do is at one point she was in, I think, London. And right before this concert, there was this like a ballet class that was a dance class for little girls that was using her music as their theme. And that class got attacked by somebody with a knife and kids got hurt and some died. And right before she was about to go on stage for that concert, she met with the families. And they didn't have the cameras back there. Like, she didn't take advantage of it or anything, but she walked out of that room and she kind of lost it for a second. And she's about to go up on stage. Yeah. And she says, before she's going on stage, she says, people paid money for the night of their lives tonight, and I don't need them worrying about me. And she kind of put that aside for a minute. And she talked later to her boyfriend and her mom and her friends about it. But she was like, when I woke up on that stage, they do not need to be worried about me. I'm there to help them experience this. And I really spent a lot of time with that scene for myself, because I was trying to really weigh this idea of, where does vulnerability come in leadership? And where does it, like, hey, I need them to not worry about me in this moment. Now, if it's so, we're going back to now your original question. If the company is struggling financially, I think being honest about that and giving a path forward and being in it with the struggle with them is important, because that's part of their story. If it's you're really not sleeping at night because of the weight of the financial, that's not what you're sharing with your team. That's for your family. That's for your friends. They don't need to be, for me, this is kind of how I show up in this. They don't need to be worried about me in this moment. That I'm going to be honest with them. I'm going to say, hey, you guys, we're not at a place where we're making payroll. And these are some things that are happening. But here's what I'm moving forward. Here's how we want to move forward and what the steps are. I want to be clear about the steps. Come to them with a plan. And even if that plan is not fully developed, talk about that. So that part's okay. But having them then feel guilty or have to carry the emotional weight of, I chose to run this business. I chose to hire the people. Mm-hmm. I chose to be in charge. And then now I'm going to come to them and make them feel sorry for me because I have to carry the burden that I asked for. I'm not doing that.
That's a really interesting distinction.
That's the difference.
That's a really interesting distinction. It's kind of like, look, like, I am not going to go in here and have people like, woe is me. I'm going to have people here understand what's real and what the path truly forward is. And we're going to go work towards it. And it's still coming from a place of actual confidence, even though there's still things to be worked out. And I've seen this. I saw this actually, the first time I really saw this was when COVID first hit. And I remember that everybody on the team was kind of looking at us being like, do we, like, this was in like April, March, you know, and like things are shutting down and everyone's like, do we have jobs? Is this going to be okay? Are we going to be safe? Mm-hmm. And it was actually Igor, my business partner, who stood up and basically not only assured everybody there is no layoffs happening, we are going to, you know, hard charge forward, but also on top of that, here's the exact path forward and here's what we're going to focus on. It wasn't just reassurance. It was reassurance with a plan backed up behind it. And he didn't want to rush to describe that plan. It's like, well, we got to tell somebody all this stuff tomorrow because everyone's got questions. It's like, wait until next week. We got a week. Let's think through this properly and let's have a proper message. So amazing.
Yeah. So that's I think that piece is I don't want to show up and but I also don't want people to show up and be like, hey, we're going to do it. And then you are laying off people the next week. Like that's not, you're not doing that either. But I think the emotional weight, I'm not expecting my team to carry that emotional weight for me. I carry that and my family, I talk to my friends, but they need to see that we're all kind of in this together, but they don't need to carry my emotional weight.
Can we talk about the opposite side of this, which is like blind, almost like arrogance and confidence in yourself that like, because you are maybe you just made $1 million this year and you're just like, woohoo, like we could just go shoot for the moon. And like, you're super confident, but it's disconnecting you from your team and the reality that they live in. How do you address that? How do you like call that out a little bit? What's a behavior change that could be looked at in that sense? Or is that okay? Go shoot for the moon and drive your team with you.
You know, I think there are some waves you want to ride. Like, you know, when everybody's doing good, we're all doing this good together. But again, I'll probably honestly go back to Taylor Swift here, because this is another thing that I learned in that documentary is when she said, when we go big and created the biggest tour that's ever existed, people should be rewarded for that. And so, like, she actually gave big checks to everybody on the team when they passed certain bonus marks. And so I think, like, when you're doing great, you include the people in that process as well. Like, I'm not saying you have to give everybody huge bonuses, but it's if they're the people who helped you make $1 million, then bring them along in that celebration. Help them feel that and accomplish that. Be a part of that accomplishment as well. It might be financial, it might not be, but however you choose, bring them along in that journey of success. Because then what happens is when it's a failure, they also need to be in it with you as well. So you can't just like, hey, we're all in this together. Everybody's got to suck it up. And then when things are going really well, you're like, man, I did great. You just can't do that. That's going to break a lot of trust. So a couple things, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs are incredibly geniuses. Like, honestly, I've met so many entrepreneurs who are geniuses. One thing I would say is don't believe your own hype, because as genius as you can be, I'm sure there's probably 20 mistakes that you made along the way that weren't genius, but we forget about those. So don't believe your own hype and surround yourself with people who are going to be honest and can be in it with you. Like, if you're leading and you're way up out here in the success, you're also just going to be way up out there in the failure. And I think in order to bring people along, you got to bring them to both.
Yeah, I've seen this in our own organization. I've seen this with a lot of members we coach, but you do tend to insulate yourself as the company gets bigger, and structurally you're adding layers of leadership. And the first layer is the first big challenge when you put in like a project manager and a sales manager and an office admin. You stop hearing the specifics down in the field. And then when you add that second layer, the people that are managing that team, it's really easy as an entrepreneur to get very disconnected very quickly. And it takes very intentional practice. Like, it is like literally like, I'm going to show up on sites and just be there to listen and observe. I'm going to make time to talk to my people. I'm going to make time to talk to my customers and make sure I don't get disconnected. And what's hard is you get so busy, those things don't seem urgent and important at all. And so it's so easy to spend a year just not doing that.
So. Yep. 100%. And there's a lot of research that's connected to, you know, people being able to trust their leader and connected with their leader. And, you know, when I talk about being a badass softie in general, there's kind of, I haven't formalized this yet, so you're getting kind of the early version, and the listeners are getting the early version. But the first piece to me of being a badass softie is having a point of view. So actually having a perspective. And that means in leadership. I learned that actually from improv, is that when you walk on stage to do a scene with a scene partner and somebody says, like, where are you going? And you go, I don't know. Well, that scene dies. Or they go, where are you going? And you go, traveling, something very generic. It's scene dies. But if they go, where are you going? You go, well, I'm getting ready to go to the moon. That's showing up with a perspective, and it allows the scene to move forward. And as a leader, I think showing up with a point of view, and it doesn't always mean that this is like the only point of view that can happen or the right point of view that nobody else can disagree with, but it's how are you showing up with a perspective that's based on your experience, that's based on your personality, like leaning into your own voice, I think is a huge piece of it. The second piece is a lot of what we talked about is show up as the guide. So once you understand kind of your own perspective and your point of view and can be confident in that, so it's a little bit of what we've been talking about, the confidence, then you show up to lead as a guide, serving other people, helping them win their story as well and the company collective story. And then there's a third piece that I bring in that really is this idea of practicing joy. And when I say practice joy or have joy, what I'm not talking about is just being happy all the time or being silly or goofy. What I'm talking about is that there's a lot of research that says that joy isn't like, I think a lot of times we view joy as the reward for hard work. Like when things went well, we are happy. So there's joy and celebration at the end. Joy is not the reward for hard work. I actually believe joy is part of the work. And what I mean by that is that, you know, Harvard has the Center for Health and Happiness, and they've shown that when people experience joy, it's not just about feeling good, but it actually helps the individual recover faster from stress, from grief, and from uncertainty. So it helps actually motivate. It moves us forward. It helps us be better problem solvers. Literally, it helps us physically and mentally recover from hard things. So we are better problem solvers. We're more creative. The University of Michigan did a study that showed that people who regularly experience moments of awe and joy actually have lower levels of inflammation and stronger immune responses. So joy in and of itself not only changes our brain chemistry, but changes our physical chemistry. And what I mean by joy is not, and this is also from the research, what do we mean by joy? Yes, humor and whimsy and fun is a part of it, but so is moments of awe, moments of gratitude. Gratitude is actually a form of joy. One huge thing is relationships. People experience joy through relationship, through connection with your coworkers, through connections with your supervisor. The studies show that when somebody can say they have a best friend at work, quote unquote, a best work friend, that their performance is higher than people who don't feel connected to their coworkers. Even connection with strangers has been shown. If you can make a simple connection with a stranger, levels of joy increase. Movement, getting up and move, experiencing nature, positive anticipation, finding flow. If you actually can create a space in your work environment where people can experience what the research shows literally is the word flow, activities that absorb you and you can throw yourself into, and then accomplishment. So when people are like, well, I'm not joyful, and that feels like it's a bit too woo-woo for me.
I was just going to say that. I was like, how do you get through? You're just giving me like good ammo, though. I'm writing all this down. Keep going. Sorry.
is that the research, if we're just going to get clinical about it, joy is actually created through connection. Mm-hmm. It's created through movement. It's created through positive anticipation. So looking forward to something, finding a flow, getting down and having 3 solid hours of work where you accomplish something actually creates joy. Completing a project successfully with a group of people. All of these things not only help people find meaning in life, this is where we talk about connection with meaning at work, but it also attaches to joy. And then, like I said, what the research shows is when we experience that joy, it's better for our bodies, it's better for our brains, it's better for our team, and it's better for our business and the way we go. So for leaders, a lot of times I have caught myself, you know, different times going, all right, guys, settle down. Let's get back to work. You know, like even in the classroom. And we almost go like, oh, we can't have those moments of whimsy and fun in the workplace, or that extra like, hey, you've already taken a half hour lunch, you know, 10 more minutes, you get back. Like if we don't allow for the space for connection, allow for the space of movement in the office, getting up and walking around, the space for laughter and joy and humor and whimsy and awe and gratitude, then we're not allowing for the best work to happen in the workspace. Like, the research shows teams will not perform as well. They will not problem solve as well. And you will also, if you just go bottom line, they don't make as much money and they lose on retention.
Man, I just wrote a whole bunch down actually. And anyone listening, please just don't just take what he said at, you know, and try and think through it randomly, like stop and pause through this. Like I wrote like, be in awe, be in gratitude, relationships, finding out, you know, anyways, I won't go through it. Just rewind this tape and read through this, because why this is so important is I think what happens over time is it's easier to be in joy when you're in startup mode and everything's new and you're like, it's all new and exciting. I think we get desensitized as the business grows. And I think things become a little bit more vanilla, even though they're amazing, right? You just get used to it for good and for bad. And it becomes a little bit, and I think In that vein, there is so much importance to intentionality behind this, because I've felt this. I know our members feel this. I feel a little bit like I've just got like dopamine overload for the last 10 years. And it's like constantly everything's like, woo, like, look at all these rushes. And then it's just like, it's harder to get that next dopamine hit because I'm like, I have to go do crazy things to achieve it. Right.
Yeah.
And in the interim, you start to dull yourself out without joy. This is amazing. So it's just taking some intentional time. And there's so many different practices you just gave to bring that back into the workplace, back in for yourself and for your team. Thank you for this. Yeah, that was good. I just want to summarize a few thoughts here. So when I see like having a point of view, it's a bit of a vision, a stance, a core set of core values, things that you believe in. And it's the bigger picture of why you do what you do. Then bringing that to your team and not from a place of authority where it's like, this is what I think is important. You guys should all believe in it, but painting a picture where they can all see themselves in it and aligning on what did you write earlier? I wrote the like where, why we're all here, but the problem is this, and this is how we're going to work together towards it. Painting a picture with everyone together and then making sure while you're on the pursuit of that, bringing joy into the workplace, both for yourself and for your team to keep that fuel moving as we go after our ambitions.
Exactly. That's amazing. Exactly it.
Dude, I prepped for this podcast and we went in a very different direction and I love what you have taken us on. So this is really good. I have a couple more questions. And the one is like, has this type of leadership always been needed in the workplace? Is this just more of an evolution of the type of people we work with today? You mentioned like working for Fortune 100 companies that are more hard and a little bit more stuffy. Like how important is this for the future of our workforce?
I think it's always been needed to some degree, but I think there was a lot of things that were built into the system that allowed for it to happen much easier. Now, when we are often disconnected because of Zoom,
right?
When the generation that's coming into the workforce now is really driven much more by their meaning than their accomplishments, like, you know, that's necessary. With AI and the computerization and the automation of so many tasks, I actually get really excited about that. But, you know, I know a lot of people are afraid of that, but I think it allows us to be more human. But if we're still kind of just living in that other space, we're going to have higher burnout. We're going to have more disconnection. We're going to have more animosity, which you're already seeing in the world. So has it always been needed? I think so, for sure. But I think in our current age where we are more disconnected because we're working remotely, we're more reliant on AI and technology to do a lot of the work that we used to be connected doing, right? Like I used to have like, say, an assistant who could do certain things, and now I don't have that person. I just go to AI. So we're more disconnected and all those things. And this next generation coming up wants that. And so if we are going to succeed in this new era, I think we have to, yes, be ambitious, learn the AI, figure out how to get ahead, do more with less. Yes, sure. But also, if you really are going to succeed in this new era, I think the people who lean into their humanity and these kind of things are the ones who are going to succeed on an even higher level. And in my opinion, it's just more fun. It leaves the world a better place. So that's the other part of it for me.
Yeah, which I think in theory everybody knows, but I think it's being intentional to put it in practice over time. It's like we all know that we're getting a little more disconnected and we're all getting a little more whatever behind the AI overlord, but it's being intentional about our daily habits and how we kind of fight it. Because actually I'll say this too, our space in contracting is probably one of the more blessed areas where we do work with our hands still. We do kind of see each other in the office for the most part. There are some models that are pretty remote, but generally I think they still have this. What I think happens is the business grows, things get a little more impersonal, and over time you suddenly lose that joy and you lose that connection with the people, and that leadership starts to turn into more of, I guess, would you call it like the hero or the villain versus like the guide?
Both.
Yeah.
That's the part is you're probably living in the villain space more than you know.
Or sometimes victim. So yeah.
Yep.
Anything else you wanted to get into today? Anything else, just like final messaging or just thoughts that we can leave with in all of this?
I think, you know, one of the things that you brought up that I think is just really important is this whole confidence piece. Confidence to me is not a false arrogance or putting on the space of where I'm going to force myself to be confident. And that's, like I said, that's false arrogance. But I do think that if more of us recognize, like actually kind of pause long enough to go, well, who am I? No, I don't want to be this, or I don't want to be this. all the models I've seen have told me I need to do this. Like, I'll just be very honest. Like, I look at a lot of podcasts with like crypto bros and I'm like, I don't want to be that. Like, right. They're billionaires. Maybe I still don't want to be that.
Feels icky.
And when I can actually like pause and be okay with that in myself and be like, this is the type of leader I want to be. And that may mean I'm not doing this or this, and that's okay. But I'm confident in who I am and showing up the way that I want to show up. I actually think then everybody else wins because of that. When you're trying to put on something false or become somebody you're not, that's when everybody start, you're hurt and you hurt other people. And the very honest truth is when we're younger and growing up in leadership, I did borrow from all these other people. And I think that was okay because I had to try on different hats and figure out who I am. But as you get further and further on in the game, you start to realize, oh, no, I want to be me. And I think when people actually lean into that space and are confident in who they are and what they're good at and what they, the type of leader in business they want to build, everybody benefits because of that.
I felt that, yeah, for many, many years. It's like you spend your 20s in warrior mode and you're just trying to be like, I'm going to win. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to make up the rules. I'm going to build the rules. I'm going to break the rules. And you're just trying to be something. And I think you get into your 30s and especially your 40s and that you start to define yourself and you start to find that real version of who you really are and to rest in that. And I think, thank God, you finally have enough experience to back it up.
Yes.
Right. And 100%. So.
And I also know, recognize I'm speaking that from a place of privilege of being the person who started my own company. You know, like if you're just in it, you know, it's a little bit different as well. But I, you know, you say 30s, 40s, and now I just turned 50. And that was where I'm like, okay, I have about 10. If I had my druthers, I'd have 10 years of grind left. Mm-hmm. What do I want those 10 years to be? And if I have any influence over what that is, then I actually need to be honest with myself and figure out who do I want to be and what kind of business do I want to lead and what kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? And that's really what, you know, going back to the very beginning of what kind of caused this shift, there was a lot of things, but really it's like, well, I'm 50. I have 10 years left to make my mark in the world the way I want to do it. And the way I want to do that is kind of launching out and doing my own thing.
So awesome, dude. Yeah, congratulations on it too. There's a podcast you run if you want to tell people where to find you. Like you've got a lot to say, my friend, and a lot of good things. So how do people figure out where you are?
If people have liked this conversation, there's a lot like this and it's Badass Softy, and it's a weekly podcast. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, all the channels, and have conversations like this, do some interviews, do some solo stuff, and I'm having fun with it. So yeah, Badass Softy podcast.
Badass Softy. It's not a hard thing to Google, and it's probably not a lot of other brands that have that anywhere on there. So awesome. Thanks, Dr. JJ, for your time. That was great, man. And have a good week, everyone else. Happy leadership, and good luck in finding that Badass Softy mix. I will be doing the same, working on these things. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.